Fifthly, to train in concentration, motivated by the spirit of enlightenment, you cultivate both mundane and supermundane concentrations. From the angle of kind, these divide into three: meditative serenity, spiritual insight, and the union of the two. From the angle of function, they are classified into three: concentration in the present lifetime, abiding in physical and mental bliss; concentration that achieves the qualities of higher realms; concentration in accomplishing sentient beings' welfare. You should train in these states free of complexity and excitement. Concentration is the king that rules the mind. When focused, it is unmovable like the lot of mountains. When we meditate about concentration in the Tibetan tradition, we practice the Tantra in a very popular manner. And so therefore, it is very widely practiced. The meditation and the concentration is widely practiced all over Tibet. And due to the difference in the classes of Tantra, of course, there are differences in the ways of meditating and the levels of concentrations. But in generally, it is very evident that from the gathering of the Chandravikita and his disciple in the Samye monastery, and from the four different regions, the first one about the meditation center, where the Chinese practitioners were mainly focusing on the concentration part as a meditator. And in Chinese tradition, there are two different traditions, and one being a meditator, so-called meditators. And of course, they are very renowned and renowned persons. And after that, and some of the Chinese so-called meditators claim that all the conceptual minds are obstacles to achievement of the ultimate concentration, and all the conceptual minds need to be eliminated or stopped from one's mind. And so the Chandravikita and his disciple Kamalashila was invited to Tibet in order to eliminate or eradicate such visions or such views that which is against the great and extensive texts. And so forth, they compose the three stages of the meditation, which are considered as one of the best texts composed by Indian scholars about the stages of meditation. It also helps in clearing the doubts and the wrong views, which are wrong views pertaining to the different stages of meditation. And as Lama Tsongkhapa said in the Lamrim, both the great and the middle Lamrim, about the practice or the meditating about the Kamai abiding meditation. And of course, he drew and a separate outline to the practice on the Vajrayana, separate from the studying about or the practice about the general path. Seeks to train in wisdom. And one of my friends, I have a friend who is a Lama. He is from Ladakh and is a very sincere and a simple Lama. And when I met him about a few years after that, and he told me that he was in 3 years meditation, meditating about meditating and concentration. And he told me that after staying in 3 years retreat, and he says that his the intelligence level has been reduced drastically. That is what he told me. And I have also some Chinese friends who told me that some of the meditators or the practitioners, while deeply in concentration for a very long time, so even though they can stay focused for a very long time, but their intelligence level of mind, their mind is very slow or very, lack the luster. So without much feeling or sensation. So that's what they told me. And someone asked me about such experiences. And these are, even though while sitting in the posture and meditating, of course, they are meditating, but first they have to understand the subtle and the coarse or the gross laxity and excitements. And if they are not able to identify the very subtle form of the laxity and excitement, then, and of course, even though they keep in meditating posture for a long time, but their mind's intelligence potential or the level will decrease. And this is something that I might have seen in many of my friends. And of course, it is very good that they are meditating, but the way how they practiced or meditate is something which should be in accordance to the great text, and this is very important. Sixth, to train in wisdom motivated by the spirit of enlightenment. You should cultivate wisdom realizing the ultimate that eradicates the root of samsara. Wisdom realizing the conventional, and on the basis of these two, wisdom in accomplishing sentient beings' will. Jerome Chi said, wisdom is the eye to perceive profound thusness, the spiritual path that tears up samsara from the root. A mine of gold, good qualities praised in all scriptures, it is known to be the best lamp to dispel the gloom of ignorance. Knowing this, the ones who aspire to liberation strive to cultivate this path in many ways. Having generated the motivation that is thought for sentient beings' sake, I shall strive to realize Buddhahood. You first bring people closer to you by generosity in the form of giving material goods. After ensuring that the expression on your face is attractive, then you then speak to them agreeably, put them at their ease, and talk to them about pleasant subjects like the six perfections. So some characters are not clear here what is written. Next, you incite them to put into practice the instructions you have given them. Finally, you personally behave in a way that coincides with the practice of six perfections, as you have encouraged them to do. Be determined to do all you can to train in these profound methods to achieve others' welfare. And Lord Buddha himself, he says, in order to ripen one's own mental continuum, there are six perfections. And in order to ripen other person's mental continuum, there are four ways of gathering. And as we discussed yesterday about the reliance upon the spiritual master, that if one is not trained or if one does not transform one's mind, there is no way that one can lead other person to transform or subdue their mind. And if you do not have any practice from your side, it is very hard and difficult for you to guide other people. As I stated yesterday, nowadays there are many people who sell dharma and who give teachings on the basis for the sake of financial purpose. And recently I met a Chinese, and in Chengdu in Chinese, there are a lot of fake masters, fake spiritual masters coming from Tibet who claim to be real masters, but in reality, they all sell dharma teachings for the sake of their own prosperity. So it is better to do their own kind of real business or financial business without there is no need to claim to be a monk and they sell dharma. And it is really very sad. And it is, of course, that it will destroy your this and the next life and the subsequent lives. But of course, it will also bring great damage to the teachings of the Buddha as whole. And now you have a lot of devotees from China and all over the world here. So you must check and examine such lamas and the gurus who claim to be real, in even though they are fake. So you have a responsibility to prove them that they are not real lamas. And notice when there are also many teachers who claim to be real masters. And during one of such congregations, and there is some Western Buddhist teachers conference. In one of the Western Buddhist conference, they says that there were a lot of mischief actions and negative actions from many Tibetan masters and also from Zen masters. And I told them that there is nothing that I can do from my side to stop such practices or to stop such fake masters. As Lord Buddha himself has explained very clearly about the distinction between the good and the wrong karmas. So if you, but they are not following this these advice is given by Lord Buddha. So if they are not listening to Lord Buddha, how will, there is no way that they will listen to me. So maybe, but they have a face to save. So you must make it very clear. You must use their names per person. Such a person with such a name is using the Dharma and to for their own prosperity. You can use the media and the newspaper, and you can do through publicity. You can make clear that such kind of masters are the fake ones. So even if you have to, ultimately, you have to bring them to court and the law. So in America, there are some instances. In Taiwan also, there might be some instances where they bring such kind of fake lamas to the court and the law. So such fake masters, due to you do not need to worry that such kind of actions will bring bad name and damage Buddha Dharma, but actually it will help to clean the Dharma. And in England recently, one of such masters was in court due to such actions, and one of their disciples told me that now there is a big danger to the Dharma that our master is in prison or to the law. And I told them that you do not need to worry at all. And there have been about 2,500 since the Lord Buddha's teachings. In this time, there were a few mischievous persons who fake masters, but it won't bring any damage to the Buddha Dharma in general. And even your teacher who is unlawful and was a fake master, even though he is caught in the law, but that won't bring any bad name to the Buddha Dharma. So those who are doing mischievous are bringing bad name, claiming to be masters. If you clear it and using the publicity manner, then of course it won't bring any bad name to the Buddha Dharma. So therefore, we say the real practice, the real Dharma and the teachings is very important that we understand. And we explain very clearly. And among the Chinese devotees also, there are many, and also in Tibetan, there are a lot. When we speak about, when we explain about the real teachings, then everybody is sleeping. But when it's about initiations or empowerments, they're all very interested and paying a lot of attention, which is really wrong. So in order to receive initiations and empowerment, you need to have the mind of bodhicitta. You need to have the wisdom, understanding, the emptiness. So actually, it's very easy to fake the actions, to fake to receive initiations. But in reality, in order to receive an actual initiation, it is very difficult. Even the master himself has to be have certain powers and certain realizations. And of course, the devotees themselves need to have certain realizations. At least the bodhicitta and the wisdom realizing emptiness. And many of us, when there is initiations or empowerment, we take it for granted. We consider themselves as very easy. But when it comes to explaining the Dharma, they are not. Many of us do not pay attention or consider it is more difficult. As Lama Tsongkhapa says that this will become a cause to degenerate, to decline. This will be a cause for the decline of Buddha Dharma. So the real preservation of the Dharma should be depending upon the three trainings and having understanding of the Four Noble Truths. And for that, it's very really important that we have a clear understanding of the two truths. The true truth as the base, and the skillful means and the wisdom as the path, and the two kayas or the enlightened bodies as the result. So this is the real Dharma, and you must be also interested and pay attention to such teachings and explanations. And the one speaker and the master should be also explain about such things. And initiations will come later. There is no need to hurry. And recently in this month, on the 21st to 23rd, for over 1,000 people coming from Russia, I think it has been over 3 or 4 years that I give teaching to them, and I told them at that time that it's very important that after studying the Dharma and the teaching, you must know and try to understand it. And I also told a story which has existed in the Pamungo Rinpoche's text that when Rinpoche gave the teaching that you must take refuge in the Buddha, and one of the disciples with really pure mind stand up and ask the master, and where is the Buddha? And the master replied, so even though if he have happened to study the text a bit, then he will explain about the four kayas and the enlightened bodies. So, but he do not understand all this thing. He keeps silent for a moment and point his finger in the sky and in the celestial being in the glass house, the Buddha sits there shining. So this is how he explains. So therefore, my two tutors also told me, especially Trishan Rinpoche, told me on many occasions that one of the women, one of the ladies who attend the Lamrim teaching, and she happens to have a good understanding about the Lamrim teaching. And one day, as the tradition of the Lhasa, on the fourth lunar month, the surrounding areas of the Lhasa, they have a tradition to go on pilgrimage to the different temples and the sacred places. And that lady, who happens to have a brief understanding about the Lamrim, she went to the pilgrimage on these sacred places. And there was a cave, meditating cave, the neighbor pilgrimage area, and she went to see the yogi present there, and she told him that, "I do not understand anything, so please, I do not understand anything except from recitation of mantras. So please give me some teaching." And the Lama told him that it's okay, there is no heart. So if you recite the mantra and if you have certain numbers of the mantra, then so he was mistaken for the another quote of text where he was not able to differentiate between the spellings of those texts. So the lady who has some understanding of the Dharma told Trishan Rinpoche that yogi was telling me such things. So he claims to be a master who is facing his disciple from the throne, and if it's such a situation, then it's very sad. And there is another story in one of the monasteries in Tibet. They happened to study the philosophical studies of the Paramita and the Madhyamikas. And one of the monks, one of the beginners, newly entering monk who's studying the Paramita while walking on the road, asks about what is the definition of the beginning path. And one of the senior monks who is coming, senior monk was approaching them, and they thought that they will ask that senior monk about what is the definition of that spiritual path. And he happens to be someone who is not well versed in the teachings. So after thinking, he said, "So that is something very strange." So it shows that he do not have the understanding about the real teaching. So in Tibet for many years, as stated in the Bodhisattvacharya avatara that one should not be mixing the teaching of the sutra and the tantra. And of course, in Tibet tradition, we practice the tantra in a very widely and in a popular manner, using the symbols, the drums, and everything. But even though we do all these kinds of ritual, but we do not understand the meaning. And maybe the contemporary Rinpoche also knows that when I arrive in Ladakh once, maybe many of Ladakhis will remember that from the helipad to going from my car, and there were a few monks in religious costumes and in their monastic dances. And they were dancing, and I asked them, is it a festival? They said, no, a sponsor and a veteran died, and they were in a procession to receive the corpse. So, of course, the Ladakhis were very obedient and very simple, and those costumes and the religious dances were normally prescribed for the blessing the ground for the mandala preparations. It's not for in the procession to bring the corpse of some sponsors or the veterans. So later they changed that. So Ladakhis are generally very sincere and obedient. So these are what we call the mixing the practices of Tantra and Sutra without having the clear understanding about what it is really meant for. And these rituals are actually meant for the generating the mind for enlightenment, to bring one closer to the state of enlightenment, but not for the sake of some daily rituals or such things. I think it was Sachin Kongga Nyingbo once while he was taking an outing, he saw someone in the monastic dances in costume, the violent and the peaceful, wrathful monastic dances. And he said that now this is the degradation of the tantric practices. And we have to take a tantric practice from India, which is very secret, not something that we practice in popularly. So later, on the purpose, they went to India to take some secret practices of tantra, which are not widely practices. And from one side, of course, being following the tradition of Nalanda traditions for over 1,000 years and practicing for over 1,000 years, it's really wonderful. But for the general public, the understanding of the Dharma and the teaching is very, very poor. And so we have to know that all the lay peoples also, it is your wish that whether you study the Dharma or not. But once you, if you are a Buddhist and if you are claiming to be the practitioner of Buddha, then of course you must understand the teaching. And having understood the teaching, you must generate faith and devotion towards the teachings. So you must understand what are the understanding of the basis, the two truths, and the paths, the skillful means and the wisdoms, then the four kayas and the resultant enlightened bodies. So in summary, as Lama Tsongkhapa says in the great exposition on Tantra, that it is not a disrespect, but try to present the contradictory ideologies or the assertions of the non-Buddhist schools. So it is very easy whether the non-Buddhist schools exist or not. But having seen the reason and having generated a faith, then one must generate a faith to one's master and the three jewels. And that you devotees, so you must generate devotion and respect to your teaching out of reason and out of wisdom, not just for following. So one need to understand briefly the essence of the Buddha's teaching. So having understood the essence of the general structure of the Buddha's teaching, then if you generate faith and devotion, then you are a true follower of the Buddha's teaching. I think it is in the great exposition in the Tantra Lama Tsongkhapa's great exposition on Tantra, or maybe I think it's one of the texts in the Tengyur. I've seen a text, and the three jewels, the identification and the nature of the three jewels, and of course their causes and how one needs to attain. So without having all these understandings, and even though you recite that may I go for refuge is millions and billions of times with tears in your eyes, but then it's impossible to develop a refuge in yourself based on cognition. And the seventh Dalai Lama also stated very clearly that we need to generate a faith and a devotion based on an understanding and wisdom. So even though the practice and the teaching itself is very reasonable and very sincere and the fact, but if you do not see the reason for practicing, or if you do not have the understanding of that, then the practice doesn't become very fruitful. And Hogesharab Gyatso once giving a teaching in the public, and there were some Chinese devotees among the listeners, and he speaks about the difficulty in finding the human rebirth from the nature of the human rebirth itself. And one of the Chinese says that, he says that you didn't came to China, that's why you feel that it's difficult, because in China there were a lot of the population, if you see, then it's not difficult that you see a lot of human peoples, humans all over. And I've seen this story in one of the texts of Hogesharab Gyatso. So this is not the fact. This is not what we meant by the difficulty or the difficulty in finding a good human rebirth. So whenever someone gives a teaching, even though they may not agree wholeheartedly, if someone has some understanding about teaching, then no one can really object invalidly. And I speak whatever it comes to my mind. I have one friend who happens to be a high master and a teacher. And a Westerner, a foreigner, came to see that master. And he told the Westerner that today I am in a good mood, so we can have tea and have snack. We have time today. Then the foreigner was very interested and asked him, what are the 10 spiritual grounds? And the master says, I am in a very hurry today. I cannot explain. I am in a very hurry today. Just a few moments before he say, I'm in leisure. I have a lot of time. But now when he asks a question about 10 spiritual grounds, then he say, I'm in a hurry. Of course, if you do not understand, he can say, I do not know it. There is no need to tell lies. So this is a problem that exists in our Tibetan society, that whenever we see a tulku or a lama, that we take it for granted that they have all the realizations and understanding. But the real fact is something we have to go after, looking at the fact, not after the devotion and the blind faith. So even the Chinese followers, you should also know that when someone claims to be a high master, you must examine it, you must check it. Even all the foreigners, if someone, you must check it. Even you can check me, you can examine that His Holiness the Dalai Lama is speaking a lot from his throne, but you can check my votes. So therefore, it's very important that we study the great texts, as Lama Tsongkhapa stated in the Kama Abidance, from the part of Kama Abidance in the Lam Rim Chemu. To one of the middle verses, I do not remember the whole stanza. And he says that otherwise, if you do not understand, then if the faith and devotion is just sufficient, then there is no need to write the commentaries for the text, so everybody can stay in peace, resting themselves without need to work on this great text. But as we know that, in order to have the real realizations, we need to understand the reality of the facts, and we have to clear the ignorance. So, clear the ignorance through the wisdom, understanding the reality. So, in order to generate such an understanding of the reality, it's very important that we study this great text. Nowadays in Tibetan society, even the layperson pays very attention to the philosophical studies. Even they are also studying the debate, the philosophical systems. We did it in Dharamsala for many years, and now I saw that even in the Kham regions, so many girls and boys are also interested, and they are taking interest in studying the debate, and I really rejoice and acknowledge your effort. And of course, you must still put effort and strive forward to make it even better. So even there is no end to it. So even though those who are in the high realized and high grounds, spiritual grounds, still they need to depend on extensive learning. So to recite a mani for a million times without having any understanding about the bodhicitta and emptiness. Of course, with an understanding of bodhicitta and emptiness, if you recite the six-syllable mani mantra, even for once, the latter will be more beneficial. So those of you who are studying Buddhist philosophical studies here, I also have that experience, and it really helped me a lot. The quote from Gongtang Rinpoche that I do not remember now. So generally, I do not remember the first sentence. So those who were in the process of studying the Buddhist philosophical studies, even though the appearance and the process, while in the process of studying, it may be very difficult, like the siblings of those trees who may not have much grains, and the grains in them siblings which do not have much grains will rise high, but those with more grains will bow down. So which shows that even though those bow downs, even though they look a little bit bent or bowed down, but in reality they are greater in the sense of having more grains. So similarly, so those in the process of those students and the monks, scholars here, so even though they may not have the same stature as the other lay persons, those with compared to the wealthy persons and the other people, so even though they, the practitioners and the scholars may not have such fame and such such facilities, but their ultimate happiness won't be different. So even though in terms of food or the facilities and the accommodation or the house, it may be very different from those who are the rich and the wealthy person, but the real scholars, the ultimate attainment and the happiness will be different. Bodhisattva practice, which combines wisdom and method, is imbued with compassion and bodhicitta and leads you beyond is indeed praiseworthy. Be aware of this and do not content yourself with only a partial path of inseparable method and wisdom. Since following the path of inseparable method and wisdom is fortunate, beings fair, you should apply yourself fully to it. Meditating both space-like absorptions on emptiness and subsequently at an illusion-like emptiness. And Lama Tsongkhapa has stated in the the part of the serenity and special insight. He has outlined a different outline of the four reasonings. So as the Nagarjuna and his Dharmasans consider the reasoning, reasoning about the Tibetan origination as the supreme of all the other reasonings. Meditating both space like absorption and emptiness, and subsequently at an illusion like emptiness, while combining both method and wisdom, is praised as the perfection of the concurrence practice. Realizing this, it is the custom of the fortunate ones not to be content with an incomplete path. Sorry, it's in page number 139, the second last paragraph. Thus you place your mind in a state of one-pointed, space-like concentration on emptiness, free of discursiveness. So until you have the concentration, the calm abiding meditation, so if you engage in too much examination and analytical meditation, it will distract you. So once you have achieved the calm abiding meditation, so the analytical meditation will progress, will be more fruitful from there on. When you rise from that state, subsequent to it, you will meditate on illusion like emptiness, in which although phenomena like inherent existence, they appear nevertheless to have it. Bodhisattva practice, which combines wisdom and method, is imbued with compassion and bodhicitta. So generally, the special insight is analytical meditation, while calm abiding meditation is the placement meditation. But in accordance to the highest yoga tantra, if the special insight is being practiced with a very skillful means, then of course it can be termed as being placement meditation. Those who have very high realizations of meditation about the subtle value or the energy, and then the placement meditation is being advised, prescribed for such practitioners. So the practice of great completion and the Mahamudra practices are actually a part of the highest yoga tantra. Through the concentration of the union of the bliss and emptiness, it is mainly focusing about the placement meditation. The main purpose and reason behind the analytical meditation is to generate conviction to the object of the focus. And as our mental becomes subtle, and it becomes subtle through the practice. So generally, as our mind becomes more subtle, so their clarity diminishes. As we see that in the highest concentration level, the clarity of the mind is minimum. But in the tantric practice of the great bliss and happiness, but the more subtle the mind becomes, the greater the clarity and the luminous happens of the mind. That is what Yenyama told me, and this is something I have thought in my mind for many weeks. And this is something which stays very close to my mind. This is something that we have to know. Since following the path of inseparable method and wisdom is fortunate being's way, you should apply yourself fully to it.
Yes,
Bodhisattva practice, which combines wisdom and method, is imbued with compassion and bodhicitta and leads you beyond its intent praiseworthy. To quote Jerembiche, meditating both space-like absorption on emptiness and subsequently attain illusion-like emptiness, while combining both method and wisdom, is praised as the perfection of the concrete sense practice. Realizing this, it is the custom of the fortunate ones not to be content with an incomplete path. Having trained well in the paths common to both Sutra and Tantra, you must without doubt engage in the practice of Tantra. The way to do so is first to have your mindstream ripened by an initiation conferred by a Vajra master and endowed with the qualities indicated in the Tantras. While thoroughly keeping the vows and commitments met at the time, you then train in sign and signless yogas according to the first three classes of Tantra, and progressively in the two stages yogas according to the highest class. In this way, you implement the complete path that includes all the essential points of Sutra and Tantra. Thereby, you make your attainment of freedom and fortune meaningful and ensure that the concrete precious teaching truly affects both your mind and others' minds. You should meditate before you, and while in fact you recite, fully convinced of what you are saying, you think that it is the Jerembiche himself who says to you joyfully, I practice in this way. You, my followers, should do the same. To quote Jerembiche, those who, having properly achieved the shared qualities, you who aspire to liberation, do the same. To familiarize my mind with it and serve other fortunate beings, I have elucidated in a way that is easy to understand the complete part that rejoices the conquerors. Think that Jerembiche himself has spoken these words to you. Next says, from now on in all my lives, bless me that I may respectfully honor your lotus feet, listen to your words, and act physically, verbally, and mentally. So only as to please you, and in all my life from the conqueror Tsongkhapa. In this way, practice dedication from the depths of your heart. With this formless instruction that includes the essential points of the stages of the path to enlightenment, the core teaching of Tsongkhapa and Jo Dibamkara may guide all sentient beings along the path that rejoices the conquerors. I have given this accessible explanation of the stages of the path of the three kinds of beings called the essence of refined gold in relation to Jerembiche's line of experience. As it belongs to the tradition of great education of the teaching, it is very much worthy of your interest and admiration. I, the Buddhist monk and disciplined Dharma teacher Go Sonam Gyatso, who even at a tender age showed signs of having been blessed by Jerembiche, composed this work at the glorious monastery of Jebun in the house called the Palace of Tushi in the sunny apartment. Thanks to it, may the essence of teaching at all times spread in all directions. So here completes the essence of refined gold. I received the transmission of the essence of refined gold and the essence of the nectar. These two transmission I received from Kono Lama Rinpoche Rigsen Tenpa, who is a Geshe from Tebon Losaling Monastery. And he also received the transmission from Kyabjin Pabonga during the eight lineage Lamaram transmissions. And the other transmissions I've received from my two tutors, the essence of refine and the essence of the nectar I received from Jen Rinzen Tenpa. So next is the essence of the nectar. It's on page 41. Homage to the perfect gurus through his superior practice of the three instructions and of the teaching as both scripture and realizations. When I took the transmission from my tutors, I do not remember whether the outlines were there or not, so maybe there is no harm in reading it. Page number 41. He is able to uphold the conqueror's thinking exactly, abiding by this great master. I shall practice the stages of the path of Sutra and Tantra. The greatness of it is allowing you to realize that all the teachings are free of contradictions, understanding that everything within the three vehicles regarding what to give up and what to realize constitute the method for any individual to achieve Buddhahood as either a main path or one of its branches is what it means to realize that all the teachings are free of contradictions. By relying on the precious instructions, once you have ascertained the meaning of all the discourses and become skilled in which practice regular analytical meditation and concentrative meditation, you cease to reject the teaching and recognize the discourses as instructions. Although the great treaties are supreme instructions, for an untrained mind, it is difficult to identify the main principles in them, or discerning them requires much time and great effort. Whereas with this instruction, you can easily determine the concrete main ideas. So it's very important that we rely upon extensive learning. So through the great extensive learning, our intelligence will improve. And of course, our mental strength will also become stronger, having heard or having relied upon extensive learning. And also our enthusiasms and the joy in learning will also arise from it. Hence, with this instruction, you give up forsaking the excellent discourses by imagining some of the concrete woods to be obstacles to attaining Buddhahood and others to be method for it. While listening to the teaching, so there are different ways from clearing the three obstacles related to a path. And if you follow all these instructions clearly, even during the teaching venue, there is an opportunity or chances that there will be a changes in one's mind. And the essence of all the teachings is to bring a changes to one's mind, to transform one's mind. So there should not be a difference between one's mental continuum and the teaching. So if the gap is so wide that even the person can come between is, then we are not suitable and we are not following the teachings exactly. How to listen to and explain the teaching? How to listen to the teaching, how to explain it, the way to conclude common to both. Whoever hears this will have their mind filled with faith. They will delight and be stable in it. Their wisdom will grow and their ignorance will be dispelled. It will be worth paying for even with your own flesh. While listening to the teaching with one-pointed faith and veneration, free of pride and scorn for teaching and the teachers, performing services and such, and being respectful, consider the teachers as you do the Buddha. Relying on the six recognitions, removing three forms similar to our vessels. How to explain the teaching? Page number 43. Rejecting consideration for gain, honors, etc., disturbed thinking, and incorrect explanations, teach as the Buddha taught the sutras and so on. Then you will gain the countless benefits taught in the sutra requested by Urga and exhortation to superior resolve. When he taught the concrete method, the guide sat of his own seat, the teaching itself being the Buddha's object of veneration. So here, prostration to the throne is very important here, which is something to be done by the master himself or herself. When the master, before giving the teaching, needs to prostrate three times before the throne, having visualized all the lineage masters before him, and do prostration for three times, then gradually sat on the throne. So even while sitting on the throne, So I think I'm becoming very old now because I cannot remember certain words and sentences clearly. So the first thing is, Kamara. So the stars and the moons as being impermanent. So thinking about the impermanence natures of all the phenomena. So the meaning behind this verse is very extensive and wide. So having read that verse, so once the master is on the throne, so the old edition you can see on page number 93. So we have a tradition of saying that for the Lamrim teachings, of course, the master needs to do prostration. But for the initiations and tantra teachings, you do not need to prostrate before the throne. But there is no reason behind it. From the day onwards, taking any initiations and empowerment, even while sleeping, walking, or doing anything. So while giving the initiations, you have the pride as being a deity himself. So it doesn't seem very suitable. So even while giving initiations, tantric initiations and empowerment, I also used to prostrate three times before coming to sitting on the throne. So those who have the older edition, it is on page number 93. The current new and revised edition, you can still look on the page number 43. Sorry for the bit interruption. With what state of mind and what behavior to teach, give a withholding information, breaking awareness in teaching, criticizing others, procrastination and jealousy, cultivate love for your disciples. And this is what the Drupal Rinpoche used to say, that the teachings of the Mahayana is that whatever the teaching gives should be beneficial, should be of direct benefit to the maximum number of the sentient beings. And we normally say that we should not be giving teaching unless someone requested for it. So it's not that you always go to every house and you do need teachings or rituals. So you should not be doing that in Tibet, in the Lhasa, during the Molam, the great Molam prayers. There is a temple, and from when I look down to the market from the window, so there are some nuns from some nunneries around the Tibet who have some a kind of a warm caps on their head, and they were going from place to place. Do you need to any pujas? Do you need any pujas? So they were shouting and going around the families. Then if family requested for one, then they clap their hands and do some prayers. So their claim or their act is it's really very helpful. Of course, if they have realizations, then it will help. Otherwise, I am not so sure about it. So in fact, the teaching of the Buddha is something that if you are not requested, we are not obliged to give it. But in some cases, if we have the intelligence and we are sure that if you give that teaching, then there will be beneficial to the other party, that even if they do not request, you must give it. So these are all very in accordance to the reality and the needs of everyone. Next, dedicate to complete enlightenment the virtue of teaching and listening. In this way, every single time you teach or listen, you will gain the innumerable benefits explained. This instruction on transforming teaching and listening into a spiritual practice is excellent and the ideal preparation, holy dear. For how the disciples are guided by the actual teaching has six. Then to practice the actual teaching, we are on page number 44. Since every single quality in disciples' minds depends on pleasing the excellent spiritual masters, to start the way to rely upon them is of extreme importance. Have broken in the mount of their mind by training and ethical discipline. So here are the 10 qualities. So this word is really very beautiful, beautifully composed. Have broken in the mount of their mind by training and ethical discipline. And with the robes of remembrance and watchfulness in concentration have made it serviceable. So concentration is something that has to come through mindfulness and remembrance. And through it, it also should be depending upon watchfulness. Perceive profound thusness with the eye of wisdom. Have studied much and have good qualities that service their disciples. Are proficient speakers with the skill to guide others progressively. Have loving nature as their move for compassion which teach. And from here, among the three trainings, the wisdom is understanding the no-selfness of a person. And the ornaments of the teaching of Mahayana, according to it, when it speaks about the qualities of a master, the wisdom here should be referred to the understanding of no-self of phenomena. Have constant joy and enthusiasm and overcome lassitude for teaching. So among all these qualities, the three trainings, understanding thusness or the emptiness, and compassion are essential. Given the times, if they are difficult to find, between good and bad, see it as key to have more good qualities. Ensure that you have all this yourself as a disciple also. Rely on those with them. Second is rejecting bias and being endowed with instant aspiration, having the intelligence to distinguish. As we speak about the qualities of a disciple, that he should be unbiased and he should have the urge to study and he should be someone who has the wish to study the teaching. So such a person is considered or said to be suitable for a disciple. Cultivating faith, that root. As I explained yesterday, that if the master speaks something which is totally against the teachings of the Buddha, then we must refrain from listening to it. And in the Haribhadra's commentary on the Paramita, he says that the Vasubandhus, even though he is very well known and renounced in the text of Abhidharma, so, but even what he explains, the emptiness and the reality things, he have explained it according to the mind-only school. And after that, they criticize that explanation and re-explain it according to the Madhyamaka schools. So Haribhadra didn't say that Vasubandhu is his teacher and that he wanted to follow whatever he says. So he criticized, even though the explanation was given by his own teacher. So similarly, Adisha also follows the same way. So even though Lama Selimba was the chief of his master for the lineage of Bodhicitta, he happens to be from a lower tenets of Vaibhashika. Even though he himself is from the Madhyamaka school, but he doesn't follow as far as the views of the school is concerned. So this is something that we need to know. And the Shukden, the parties, when they killed, the murdered the late Venerable Lobsang Gyatso from Tibetan dialectical status. And he told me that, and he used to scold the students in the, says that, so if you need to the, if you need everything to be seen perfectly, then you please do not indulge in negativities. And if you want everything to be listened, then do not see unnecessary things. So this is what he says. He really speaks directly, and he's a very compassionate and a kind person. So he, of course, always speaks what comes to his mind, and later he is repaid with his life for that. With great faith, focus on the master's good qualities. Do not consider their faults even for an instant, for it will hinder your achievement of spiritual realization. If through carelessness you regard their faults, confess it immediately. Having recalled their kindness, developing veneration, here to recall their kindness. So here maybe we can do the gracing for tea in between this. So this is also listed in the Lamrim Chemo with a quote that the master is also, the master should be also someone that is being pleased with the offering of the spiritual realizations, or being spiritual not by the offerings of the world. As Lama Jizu Milarepa said that, I do not have any offerings to make except for my abidance to my guru, my obedience to my guru. The benefits are those of placing the concurrents and being close to masters. Five, the drawbacks of not relying on them. So generally, in terms of the outline, first it comes the first how to rely upon the masters, and then the drawbacks of not relying upon them come first. But here is slightly different. If you commit a breach of reliance with the spiritual master, through ignorance at your death, you will rose in unrelenting torment. Six, a summary of the above. In brief, if you sincerely wish to practice the teaching, rely for a long time upon masters who guide you infallibly. Second, a brief explanation for meditation purpose is how to actually meditate and why it is necessary to meditate using both meditational methods. Next, in a clean space, set up symbols of body, speech, and mind. Arrange faultless offerings in an attractive way, on a seat, cross-legged, with your body straight. And so normally, sometimes we feel that we need a different place or space in a room for your practice, with some altars and the statues. So sometimes, maybe a half, maybe out of your devotion or faith, or the half, we can say, Maybe you have, out of your attachment and desire for the statue, sometimes we insist on having a very expensive and very old and gold statues in your altar, so which is also not correct. So looking at Jesus Milarepa, he attained the highest attainment in a lifetime without anything in his cave, in a deserted cave. And even while staying in the retreat in the deserted cave, there was not a single object of offering. And also, Jesus Milarepa do not have anything, even other yogis do not have anything. Maybe they might have a statue of Buddha, or those practitioners of the Tantra may have the vajra and bell. So, Jesus Milarepa once, while meditating in his cave, a thief came at night and was looking for something in the darkness. And Jesus Milarepa, laughing, told him that, "I cannot find anything at daytime. What you can find at night?" He laughed after that. And the thief also laughed and ran away. So these are the real practitioners. They do not have any attachment to any objects. So our practice is much related to the desire and attachment to a lot of objects relating to 8 worldly concerns. So even the offerings is that our motivation should not be contaminated. Our motivation should be set right. As the story of the Geshe Benguyen goes, that he noted his sponsor or the patron was coming to see him as a cave, and so in order to please his sponsor or the patron, he said of the patron, then after sitting on the cushion, he checked his motivation. Then he came to know that it was the 8 voltage concern that makes him do the offering, taking a handful of the dust, spray it over the offerings, and cover his head with his robes. And while the patron came, he was staying with his head covered with his robe, and the offerings were filled with dust. And this is what we normally call as fighting against the conceptual mind that also dictates everything to us. So this is a really antidote or directly countering the conceptual mind that comes in us. So Benguyen was actually a robber before, and one day while went to a family to do some teachings or to do some ritual. So before becoming a monk, he was a robber, so automatically his hand raised to take some things, as he was a robber before, as he was doing some prayer. So automatically his hand raised and trying to take something, and gradually he hold his hand by another leg and says, "The robber is coming." And the patron came and asked him, "Where is the robber or the thief?" And he said, "It is this hand is going to take the things." And this is a very good example, and trying to check or examine one's own mind without thinking about what other people sort of say, without having a fake expressions. So whatever the reality they put forward. Take refuge and generate bodhicitta, being careful to be sincere, visualize the merit field. So the actual merit field should be one's guru or the teacher. And from the Nagarjuna and his his sons, and after seeing, it's only through the listening and seeing the great texts composed by them that we are able to practice what is today here. And this is something that we can see as a gift being given by our the direct spiritual master, who is of the kindness of 3 kinds, having giving us the vows, individual liberation vows, and also instructions with the scriptural sources, and also empowerment and initiations, and also commentaries and explanations. So the direct, the master is the only source and the only causes for oneself, for us to who will bring us to the enlightenment. And we have to visualize him as the manifestation of all the Buddhas combined together. With the Guru as the main figure, perform the sevenfold practice, condensing the essential for accumulation and purification, the five homage offering, requesting, supplicating, and rejoicing. The general perspective of the teaching, and in particular the Guru Yoga in the Tantric, if somebody do not have a good understanding about these things, then if they say like, you should pay respect to me as a master, then some people may have such conceptual, some people may get such thoughts, which is wrong. So therefore it is important to have a basic understanding about the Guru Yogas of the Sutra part and the Tantra. The five homage offering, requesting, supplicating, and rejoicing, accumulate the collections, confession purifies the obstructions, joy increases. Dedication ensures that. So from respecting to your masters, to the calm abiding meditation, and to special insight, or from, we can say, till the ultimate enlightenment. We have to supplicate to them wholeheartedly. The actual meditation is how to meditate in general and in present context. If you wish to make your mind receptive to virtue, you must be sure of the order and number of meditational topics. And with neither excess or lack, using remembrance and watchfulness, be intent upon them. Otherwise, the virtuous practices of a lifetime will be flawed. In this context, reflect upon the advantages of relying on the spiritual masters and hear from the heart of the merit fields. We have to visualize all the gurus and the masters that we have directly received teachings, and from that we have to visualize and think about all the qualities, beneficial qualities of relying upon the spiritual masters, and also the negative karmas that one have accumulated of not relying upon one's spiritual masters, and also due to the wrong ways of relying upon one's spiritual masters. So one need to visualize and think about all this. So what to do to conclude? Afterwards, dedicate the virtue following this procedure. Divide the day into four sessions and make every effort. So this is very helpful. So we need to have more sessions, but the sessions should be very short. So the session should be concluded before ones get tired. So therefore, the quality becomes very good. And also, that your encouragement and enthusiasm will remain. So if you conclude the session out of respect, out of a good mood, then you will get the feeling to continue again. Then if you conclude the session after you are tired, then you won't feel to continue the next session. Once you have mastered this, you may meditate as befits you. Between sessions, do not put the topics meditated out of your mind, but recall them again and again. For that purpose, accumulate merit and purify obstructions. Furthermore, control your senses and eat with moderation. Strive in the yoga of no sleep, and when you do sleep. So the practice during the intervals is very important. When we speak about practice, and even you may know how to do the practice, then there is a way that we can make the whole 24 hours or even a whole week or the whole month in terms of a 24 hours from getting up till going bed. We can make use of the whole day as a means for practice. And first, from the guru visualizing of the Guru Yogas, and then of the visualization of the deities, the deity yogas, and in particular about the when visualizing or meditating about the deity yogas, it's very important to meditate on emptiness, even with a slight understanding about emptiness. It is very important to meditate or think about emptiness, and also think about the bodhicitta mind that aspires for enlightenment, and think that the real obscurations which obscure us from becoming enlightened or becoming Buddha is the obscuration which obscure in the understanding of everything or the omniscient mind. So in order to eliminate or eradicate the obscuration to enlightenment with its latencies and imprints, we need to meditate bodhicitta and meditate on emptiness. And as we always recite and do the practice of the Guru Session Yogas and the Deity Yogas, so it's very important that from the emptiness as the object and from mind as the subject, so it's from these two, object and the subject, should be the union of this, should be inseparable or indivisible. So the object that we to be accumulated or object to be attained is the clear light or the very subtle form of the mind, and the bliss or is the means to achieve that. So in this way, if we can utilize the whole day, even in terms of you having your meals, even while you are sleeping, you can also meditate upon this, or even while you are dreaming, there are ways to utilize it in a virtuous way. So there is a good way to use your whole 24 hours in a virtuous way. So in this way, we can accumulate both the merits and the wisdom accumulations. Why it is necessary to meditate using both meditational methods? The preliminary is the main meditation, the conclusion and the intercessions are the same after inside, excluding the main meditation. So while meditating, if we are feel too low, then there is a chances that the laxity will arise. Or if you are too concentrated or too much thinking about something, the excitement may arise. So if you have a little understanding about the impermanence or any other things, there is a chances that your mind will settle down. When you think about the beneficial effects of bodhicitta and the emptiness, there is a chances that your mind will rise to feel. Or when we speak here about raising one's mind in terms, we're not speaking about just through different methods or normal methods. Just as gold becomes malleable when heated and washed, so all the meditations, if we consider all the meditations to be a placement meditation, then of course our understanding of meditation is too narrow. So two will focusing on disgust and delight, with black and white karma and their effects, with intense appreciation of the object and prolonged analytical meditation, ensure mental serviceability for achieving either serenity or insight, whichever you wish. Hence, to realize selflessness, analytical meditation is best. When working to achieve meditative serenity, for example, it is not good to analyze excessively, as concentrative meditation is needed. Having relied upon how to progressively train your mind, being born in a remote land with incomplete senses, holding wrong views, and where the concrete teaching is not found, are the four human nor liberties. Adding a long life God to in the lower realms, there are eight. Lacking this, it is thought constitute the freedom. Being a human in the central line, in the central land, and with complete senses, is the ninth non-liberties. It is present in the Chimijevenigu that he has very extensively explained the nine non-liberties. Not having committed an irremediable karma, having faith in the three collections, a Buddha having appeared and taught the Dharma, his teaching having been maintained, and the presence of his followers and those with compassion for others. So having the Buddhas arrived in this world is not being exactly same here, but even we have his texts in front of us. So from it we can take the vows and everything. So we have a substitute for it, which is almost in terms, in certain terms, similar to it. Contemplating the great potential of freedom and fortune. Once you have attained a life with the 10 kinds of good fortune, striving after the conscience of this life is animal behavior. Only rebirth as a man or woman in the other three continents is a suitable basis for taking vows, not in Uttarakuru. With most rebirths as gods of the higher realms and the desire realm, and here it is not possible to attain an Arya path for the first time. Having attained a human rebirth with a powerful mind, if you use it meaninglessly, you are like someone superfied by magic. Not only is it the basis needed to travel Tathagata's path, it is also the basis with which you can produce the causes of a high rebirth, of wealth and entourage, that are generosity and so forth, not with another. For this reason, constantly contemplate its great potential. Halting, contemplating how difficult they are to attain. Halting entirely to the sight of non-virtue, you open the door to the lower realms. The thief of anger plunders the virtue within you. You fail to purify past mistakes and to abstain from future ones. Yet remain at ease. Think of the rebirth that awaits you. Since gaining happiness depends on the Dharma, you must practice it. Because you have spiritual masters as well as freedom and fortune, you can practice it. If you do not do so now, in the future, it will be difficult to attain freedom and fortune. As the time of your death is not set, practice it from now on. Compared to the lower realms, the likelihood of a high rebirth is very small. If ordinary high rebirths are rare, consider the rarity of freedom and fortune. In brief, identify the nature of freedom and fortune, and in the context of karma and its effects, contemplate the difficulty of attaining them. How to take full advantage of it? Gaining certainty regarding the system of the spiritual path in general, to how to actually take full advantage for it. Page number 49. All spiritual paths, the subject matter of all the discourses, are without doubt included in the path of the three kinds of beings. For there is no discourse that was not spoken for any reason other than to ensure the achievement of high rebirth in certain goodness. As the three stages respectively allow you to achieve high rebirth and certain goodness, the latter, dividing into two, foremost, there is inclusion. As for the way to be guided, the lesser and intermediate paths are shared. Prepared by some of them, you are led to the great being's path. The spirit of enlightenment is the main beam of the great vehicle. For the completion of the two collections, it is like a philosopher's stone. All temporary and ultimate objectives without exception are doubtlessly achieved by the supreme aspiration. To realize the aspiration that carries such advantages, you need great delight in its benefits. Since you achieve it by contemplating the paths shared with lesser and intermediate beings, be certain to meditate on this and you will realize it. Love and compassion are the roots that allow its development. When someone reflects on the way she is personally deprived of happiness and tormented by suffering, if it does not horrify her, it will be impossible to feel that other suffering are unbearable. Thus, by reflecting on the way you are subjected to the misery of the lower realms and are deprived of happiness even in higher rebirths, 50. Abstain from lesser and intermediate transgressions if you by them restore it. Train in the six perfection in general to particular degree. So the negative side of not remembering the teachings, and also the negative coming out of mispracticing the teachings are also very severe. The purpose, if you ask, since the lesser and intermediate parts are prerequisites for the great, why speak of three? It is to overcome in the untrained the pretension of being a bodhisattva and to benefit those of a great, intermediate and lesser capacity. The need to generate the attitudes of the three kinds of beings progressively is explained by the sutras and by the great trailblazers. A lesser being is not a suitable recipient of the Supreme Path. So even though we cannot stop the dead from approaching, but one has the freedom, or it is in our own hand, that when the dead approaches, we can handle it carefully or handle it in the right way. How to actually take advantage of it? Training the mind on the stages of the path shared with lesser beings, training the mind on the stages of the path shared with intermediate beings. Page number 51. By thinking every single day, today I will not die, and being concerned solely with this life, the eye of your intelligence declines. Your virtue is weak and it destroys increase and wounding. Since all the products and all the phenomena will degenerate or disintegrate momentarily. Therefore, it's very important to think about the impermanence nature of all the phenomena. What could be worse than turning your back on the teaching in this way? Therefore, from the depths of your heart, contemplate your death and see that the great importance you attribute this life is given. So from the moment you are born this world, so our pace or our approach towards the dead is getting nearer by every moment. The advantage is maintaining the idea that you will not die is the source of all the misery, while awareness of death is the mind of all excellence. In brief, all this time, when you have attained the means to achieve being goals, understand the faults of postponing dharma practice of sleep and lethargy, of meaningless talk, food and drink, distraction and so forth, and instill in your heart uncertainty regarding the time of your death. Then although you cannot actually stop death, you should fear a death associated with sin. Dying once, you have stopped the causes of lower rebirths and produced the cause of higher rebirths, and certain goodness is the wise person's practice. We are at page number 52, last paragraph. Contemplating that at the time of death, everything but the teaching is useless. Page number 53. Reflecting on the way future lives will be, the joys and the suffering of the two kinds of rebirth. Contemplating the suffering of hell beings, hungry spirits, animals. Thus you will soon die, you have no time to stay. When this occurs, you will not cease to exist, but according to your karma, will be propelled towards and born into one of the two kinds of rebirth. If you fall into a lower rebirth, the torments will be innumerable and unbearable. Heat or cold, emaciation from hunger and thirst and stupidity. For a period of intermediate length eons, a human month being equivalent to a single day, 10,000 of its own years is the duration of a hungry spirit's life. Animals too may be tormented by suffering for as long as an eon. Relying on the method for happiness in future lives. Where the last bearer, relying upon the method for happiness in future lives, those desiring liberation take as a refuge those who are entirely free of all faults and possess all the various good qualities, and they too the teaching and the Arya Sanghas. Worthy of refuge are those who are entirely free of all personal fears, who are skilled in the methods to free other others from their fears and those whose compassion extends to all. Although the conqueror has already provided the external conditions for it, you must provide the internal conditions, trust and firm regard of them as a refuge. If you ask what makes a practice of refuge effective, a beautiful body, splendid with the glory of complete signs and marks, that with a single line answers all queries at once. Wisdom and compassion that fully encompass the spirit of all objects of knowledge, activity that is spontaneous and ceaseless. These, in brief, are Buddha's good qualities. In addition, the teaching's quality is to produce the above when meditated upon. The Sangha's quality is to practice the teaching well, knowing the particular qualities of the spiritual in depth. Since the conqueror as the guide, the teaching as the actual refuge, and the Sangha as companions, and the guide his teaching and his Sanghas as faultless, while the others are the opposite. Those who achieve within them all of the above, by this fact, are considered to have an effective refuge practice. Refraining from taking refuge in other deities and from the intention to harm or kill, and not associating with bad companions are the prescriptive precepts. In relation to any likeness of the Tathagata, be it matter of wood, make offerings, pay homage, develop faith, and so on, for even a single line of teaching or an inch worth of yellow robes, feel the same reverence as you would for the actual teaching and sanghas. Page number 55. Developing the faith of conviction, the root of all happiness and goodness. General happiness and suffering arise in general from virtuous and non-virtuous karma. Particular forms of happiness and suffering arise from particularly subtle forms of each kind of karma. Contemplating the different kinds individually, explaining the importance of 10 paths, establishing the karma and its effects. Although all actions of the 3 doors are not found in the 10, where page number 56, it is taught that the main ones are included in the 10 karmic paths. If you do not adopt even a single virtue, like the ethical discipline and so on, and yet pose as a Mahayanist, it is said that you deceive the entire world before the conquerors. Thus, it is those who guard their speech, control their minds well, and abstain from committing non-virtue by means of their bodies who endeavor to follow of the great Rishi's path. Establishing karma and its effects. Regarding all 10 non-virtues, starting with killing, the way to analyze them is from the angle of the basis, thinking and action. The basis is another sentient being. Identification, the kaleshas, and the motivation constitute the thinking. Recognizing a sentient being to be so and so, etc., are the 4 identifications. The kalesha is any of the 3 poisons, the motivation, the wish to kill. When the motivation is general, even if mistaken, they will be seen. The action is stabbing, poisoning, using black magic and so forth. Whether you do it yourself or have it done, it is said that for completion due to the action, the victim must die before you do. The principle of the general motivation is the same for remaining 9. The basis of the theft is property owned by another. Within the thinking, identification and kaleshas are analogous to killing. Page number 57. Unsuitable locations before a stupa, your teacher and so on. And unsuitable times, pregnancy, when one day vows have been taken and the like. Within the thinking for the former, identification must be unmistaken. But for sexual relations, it is said that it is the same regardless of it being mistaken. In the treasury, however, a different explanation is given. The kaleshas may be any of the 3 poisons. The motivation is the wish for sexual relations in the form of sexual misconduct. The action is striving to that end. Its completion is the meeting of 2 of the 2. The basis for lying are what you saw, etc., the 8 and the 1 hearing. Within the thinking, identification is distortion of what you saw into what you did not see, etc. The klesha is as before. The motivation is the wish to speak. As for the distorted identification, the action is speaking or concurrent. It is the same when you express yourself with physical gestures or signals. Whether said for your sake or someone else's sake, it is lying just the same. For all three, lying, divisive speech, and cruel speech as well, it is said having someone do it for you is also a karmic path. But according to the Vinaya, you must do it yourself. Completion occurs when another person understands what you say. When the three, lying, etc. are not understood, they become senseless talk. The basis of divisive speech are incompatible or incompatible sentient beings. Within the thinking, identification and the kaleshas are the same as for lying. The motivation is the wish to divide the compatible or impede the reconciliation of the incompatible. The action can be speaking truthfully or the contrary, pleasantly or the reverse. You can do so yourself or have others do it for you. Completion occurs when the divisive words spoken are understood. For cruel speech, the basis is a sentient being towards whom you feel hostile. The two components of the thinking are the same as before. The motivation is the wish to speak cruelly. The action is to speak unpleasantly, either truthfully or untruthfully regarding the imperfections of someone's family line, body, or ethical discipline. Completion occurs when the person addressed has understood what you said. For meaningless talk, the basis is pointless subject matter. Within the thinking, there is identification of the topic you wish to speak of as such. The klesha is any of the three mental poisons and the motivation. The wish to engage in senseless and futile talk. The action is to begin your empty chatter. Be aware that it is complete as soon as you have spoken pointlessly. The basis of greed is another person's wealth or property. Within the thinking, the identification consists of recognizing it as such. The klesha is one of the three poisons, and the motivation, the wish to possess it. The action is to pursue that goal. Completion occurs when regarding the world and so on, whatever it may be. The thought arises, may it be mine. Page number 58. For the seven physical and verbal karmas, the preceding is more serious than the next. For the three mental ones, the subsequent is more serious than the preceding. Moreover, it is said that those motivated by a violent form of any of the three poisons, done over a long period of time, habitually or many times, are more serious. The karma generated continually, passionately, with no antidote, in relation to a basis with God qualities, are important for you. The basis being divided into two, possessors of good qualities and the beneficent, these five factors, it is taught, render greater any virtue or non-virtue that you do. Page number 59. In this regard, a brief explanation of the powerful karma. Powerful in respect to the field, basis, action itself, and thinking behind it. In relation to the three jewels, gurus, objects of offering, parents, and so on, whatever good or harm you do, both merit and sin will be great. Stealing the property of other jewels is a repair, but returning it. Taking the sanghas is not purified until you experience the result. Robbing the sanghas of their food source leads to rebirth in great hell. stealing anything else of theirs to rebirth in darkness, adjacent to unrelenting torment. Compared with throwing all the sentient beings of the 10 directions into a dark prison out of anger. It is worse to tell a bodhisattva, "You are a horrid, I don't want to see you ever," and turn your back to him. Compared with destroying as many stupas as there are water molecules in the Ganges River, it is taught that feeling anger or ill will towards a bodhisattva or speaking unkindly to one is a far greater sin. Compared with out of love for them, restoring the sight of sentient beings in 10 directions who have been blinded, or to releasing all prisoners and establishing them in the joy of Brahma Ram, it is taught that aspiring to the great vehicle, wanting to meet bodhisattvas, or praising them brings far greater merit. Compared with killing all sentient beings of Jambudvipa or stealing their belongings, it is more serious to prevent someone from offering a bodhisattva a handful of food. Regret what you did before, guard yourself from it in the future, and do not conceal your sins. By way of antidote, perform virtue, the sins of the wise are lighter. Minimizing these and priding yourself on being knowledgeable are particularly serious. Compared to a householder bodhisattva's offering to the conquerors of water limbs as tall as Mount Meru and as numerous as the sentient beings in the three realms, and altar bodhisattva's offering to the conquerors of a single oil lamp is superior. Following this logic, those who possess vow, by comparison with those who do not, have a far more efficient practice of the path. Compared to the sinful deeds committed unceasingly over 100 years by a householder who engages in all 10 non-virtues, it is more serious for a bhikshu of faulty ethical discipline with the banner of yellow robes. Page number 60. To partake of the offerings of the faithful for a single day, it is taught that it is due to the basis that this sin is so powerful. We're in page number 61, White Karmic Paths. Now I will explain the White Karmic Paths in the present context of the four, the basis, thinking, action, and completion. The basis is another sentient being. As for the thinking, because of seeing drawbacks, it is the wish to abstain from it. The action is the thought to abstain from it completely. The completion is the physical karma of thoroughly accomplished abstention. This is the virtue of abstaining from killing. Apply this to the others, sorry. The maturation effects of the three, great, average, and lesser virtue, are respectively rebirth as a human, a desire from God, and a higher from God. Take the effects concordant with the cause and environment effects to be the object of the non-virtues. So the ripening effects of different karmas, there are different varieties and categories. Those which have been not been accomplished, not being sought. So in short, when we speak about karma, or karma is simply an action, and all the phenomena are falls under the circle of cause and effect. So within the interdependent nature of the cause and the effect, as explained in the Bodhisattva Avatara, engaging in the deeds of Bodhisattva, that the way we suffer and happiness are being distinguished and explained differently. So seeing different colors, different flowers, is due to their different causes. We are not speaking about the karmic actions here. It is more about the conventional or the environmental cause and effect. But when we speak about the karma as the beginningless causes for the mind to take rebirths in the samsara and again, then we refer to the karma as the cause of that. And even though every phenomena needs to have a precedent cause to it, but again, these sufferings and happiness are happen through the karmic actions. So when we speak about the emotions of feeling, the pleasant emotions or unpleasant emotions are all different forms of minds. And even since it being a mind, the mind also needs another precedent cause, which is also a mind. So the causes should be in accordance, or causes should be concordant to the results. And I used to tell that so many people say that they do not want to do much from themselves, from out of laziness. They say that it's all due to karma that happens to me, and do not want to do anything, brothers. If something good or a positive, it's due to the blessing of the three jewels. If it is bad, due to my karma. So it is a kind of a laziness that drives you to do this. So who causes the actions or the karma? It is none other than the yourself. Since if you do not wish to have suffering, then you should abstain or refrain from indulgence and negative activities which will bring negative karmas. Or if you want pleasant or happiness, you must engage in the actions which bring pleasant and happiness to you. But in terms of non-believers, or in terms of those who believe in the Creator, the God creates everything, but that is a different case. So this is about the different categories of the karma. I will explain the word karmic paths. The next one. The maturation effects of the three, great average and lesser virtue, are respectively rebirth as a human, a deserver from God and a higher from God. Then again, the karmas, if they have been already planted or done, but the result may not be experienced. So the karma can be also categorized in terms of the result being experienced or not. And even those who are certain to be experienced can be also categorized further, that one, those ones who will be experienced the next rebirth, and those who will be experienced after many and the subsequent lives. Page number 62, contemplating karma and its effects in particular. So when we speak about thinking, contemplating about the karma in particular, so first we're speaking about the negative actions and a way to refrain from engaging in those actions. And the opposite of that, which is are the 10 positive actions. And from the individual, as an individual also, we have the potential to engage in 10 positive things. And also we can bring a lot of benefits to other persons, having bestow or having the 10 ripened results, 8 ripened results in us. The advantages of full maturations, their functions and the causes of full maturations. With this, you achieve an excellent basis that leads to omniscience. They concern lifespan, complexion, lineage and power, trustworthy speech, great power, mildness and having strength. Long life allows the accumulation of virtue, good complexion, taming disciples, good lineage, the application of your instructions, power drawing sentient beings, trustworthy speech, gathering them by the four means, great power, having what you do to acknowledge and your instructions quickly healed. Having a male organs allows for vast wisdoms and no obstacles. Having strength brings great enthusiasm and quick attainment of the supernormal powers. The causes of full maturations are not harming sentient beings, giving light, butter lamps and so forth, and new clothes, overcoming pride, giving food, clothing and so forth when requested. Familiarization with abstention from the four verbal non-virtues, making aspirational prayers and making offerings to the gurus and three jewels, reflecting on the disadvantages of femaleness, saving from castrations, helping in whatever way is suitable, providing food and drink. When page number 63, having contemplated them, how to turn from non-virtue and turn to practice virtuous things. A general presentation, and in particular, how to purify yourself. Having learned about black and white karmas and their effects, if you do not achieve uncontrived ascertainment of this topic of meditation, when you meditate on emptiness. So when someone practice or when someone meditate on emptiness, and some says that there is no essence and there is no essence in practicing anything because it's all empty. So it shows their lack of understanding about what real the emptiness is. As Nagarjuna says that emptiness is none other than the Tibetan origination. And whatever is Tibetan origination are emptiness or is emptiness. So this is something that we have to remember very often. And whatever you practice, it is certain to not please the conquerors. The King of Concentration Sutra says, the moon and the star may fall from their places, mountains, cities, and the rest may crumble. The space element itself may take on another form, but you will never speak falsehoods. But the reason why every phenomena is empty of existence is because they are dependent upon each other. They arise with dependence upon their cause and conditions. So therefore, they are absence of existing independently. So this understanding of emptiness from the point of Tibetan origination is very powerful. So having seen all the moving and immovable things as being empty due to the fact that they are all under the circle of cause and effect, so therefore generating of understanding as being all the phenomena as being empty or mere designated through the fact that they are all under the circle of cause and effect is very powerful. Page number 64. Furthermore, the chapter of truth says, O King, do not kill. For their life is what all sentient beings hold dearest. Therefore, if you wish to continue living a long time, do not consider killing even in the back of your mind. Accordingly, regarding the 10 non-virtues and the rest, put a halt to just the intention to commit them. Since the system is difficult to perceive and extremely subtle, discriminating intelligence is needed to establish it with certainty. In this regard, do not show bravado like in a contest. Every day examine your three doors and strive to be conscientious, for it is taught that all that occurs is the consequence of our actions. Correct your transgressions with the procedure specific to each of the three kinds of vows. It is said that the best way to purify yourself of sin is by means of the four forces. Strong and repeated regret about the non-virtue then is a force of eradication. Memorizing sutras, believing in emptiness, reciting profound dharanis, making images of the conquerors, striving to present offerings to the three jewels, and pronouncing names. These six, along with the others, make up the application of antidotes. There is a space between two characters here. Generating bodhicitta and refuge constitute the force of the basis. Regarding how sins are purified, it is taught that the suffering to be experienced is shortened, lessened, or neutralized completely, or that which will otherwise be experienced severely in a low rebirth occurs instead in the present life as just a minor illness. The four forces purify even karmas whose effects are certain to be experienced. And confession weakens their capacity to produce maturation effects. Although restoration is possible, non-contamination is best. The measure of having produced this attitude, turning from concern for this life and being interested mainly in future lives, is the measure of being produced a lesser being's attitude. We're on page number 65. Not having surpassed human and divine suffering, nor that of conditionality, you are certain to fall again into a lower river, then end result can only be grim. Consequently, you must train in the attitude shared with intermediate beings. Liberation is complete freedom from what you binds you to cyclic existence. The desire to attain it is the aspiration to liberation. If you reflect on sufferings, the drawbacks of the appropriated aggregates, seeing their faults, the wish to discard them will arise of its own occult. Once you have thoroughly understand how you are tormented by suffering, you will truly strive to overcome its causes, a key point. When you see you can overcome them, you will determine to attain cessation. The final para, the actual meditation on suffering, contemplating the suffering of cyclic existence in general, page number 66. I think I have read it. How to practice on the path shared by the intermediate paths. I think I have read it. He's missing. There is 15, the 16 page is missing. Oh, the 16 is back there. It's here, the 16th. I thought it is taken away by the wind. Somebody went to incense offerings, and the text is taken by wind. And once in Mongolia, I was giving a teaching in the stadium, and there was a huge wind came, and my text, which I brought from Lhasa, took by wind. I really feel sad. And I asked them to look for it, and they found it after from the outside of the stadium. It was torn a little bit, but I got it finally. Page number 65. In the middle, the method to generate it. If you reflect on sufferings, the drawbacks of the appropriated aggregates, seeing their faults, the wish to discard them will arise of its own accord. We have already read that before. So this explains about how one should meditate with the object in focus. It's not like a kind of a force that someone forces you to meditate, but out of your own wish and aspiration that we have to meditate. Meditate with an intense and heightened state of mind. You are to practice the qualities of three vehicles with actual serenity and insight. The actual meditation on suffering, as I explained this morning, from the different sources of the great extensive sutras, the Four Noble Truths has been praised or emphasized a lot. Of course, due to the different schools' view of the philosophical views of the ultimate truths or the emptiness, and of course, that's due to that the explanation may differ in the subtlety in terms of the subtlety of the Four Noble Truths. And in the Valid Cognition, Brahmana Vartikarga, it speaks about the very subtle form of impermanence. In terms of the very subtle dependent origination view, we also speaks about ignorant, a very subtle form of ignorant, and the four aspects of the truth of suffering, which are also quite subtle due to the origin or the causes of the ignorance, which is also the subtle, which is asserted by the Madhyamika school. And especially when we speak about the truth of cessations to be ceased, and also the four aspects of the part two cessations will differ from different schools. And also the four aspects of the origin of the truth when it comes to the grasping and also the afflicted. So the subtlety of these afflicted emotions due to the causes or the origins will differ with different tenets. So here it is generally presented, but then it is important that we know the subtle distinctions between these details. The suffering of birth has five aspects. Birth is associated pain and associated dysfunction tendencies. This is very, it says that the natural, as we are born as human being, the natural of the body itself is a nature of suffering. So unless we give an end to the samsaric rebirths, then the suffering, there won't be any end to the continuous sufferings. In the same way, the suffering of aging has five aspects, a good physic declines, strength fades, and senses deteriorated. Enjoyment of objects diminishes, and life degenerates. Reflect on these sufferings. And then on the five sufferings of illness, that of physical change, of our increasing mental anguish, and so on, of no desire for attractive things, of the obligation to resort to unpleasant treatments against your wishes, and of losing your life. The suffering of death is five aspects too: separation from your body, belongings, dear relatives, and entourage. And the suffering of mental anguish, reflecting well on how you must undergo this intensively, cultivate this enchantment. Suffering arises from the mere encounter with unpleasant people, the apprehension of being punished by them, the dread of unpleasant talk, the fear of dying horribly, and terror at the thought of falling into a lower rebirth after death. And from the eight sufferings, the first one and the final one should be contemplated or should be contemplated upon combinedly. And it will be great beneficial to think about these three sufferings combinedly. As Benjamin of Sanchukin stated that in order to think about the negative sides of the samsara, even the animals have the desire to free from the gross level of sufferings. And also the grosser level of the sufferings, even the non-Buddhist practitioners have the wish to free from that. And when we speak about our human body, the rebirth. We are not speaking or pointing to an external human rebirth, but rather we should be pointing to our own body as the source of all the suffering. Separation from what you care for as five aspects too, when separated from your entourage and so on, sorrow fills your mind. You lament and inflict harm upon your body, recalling them and aching after them. You are full of anguish, no longer able to enjoy them, you suffer. The suffering of not getting what you want despite seeking it is similar to the suffering of separation from what you care for. Contemplating the six sufferings and contemplating specific sufferings, contemplating the origins, the process that propels you to cyclic existence. We are on page number 68. Like seeds lacking moisture, although you have numerous karmas, if you lack kalashas, the seedling of suffering will not grow. So become an expert on how to rely on the kalashas remedies. Attachment clings to pleasant objects. Anger is a harsh state of mind, a hostile attitude in relation to its objects. Pride is an inflated state of mind as the aspect of superiority. So it's important that we draw a distinction line between the suspicion which is by nature afflicted and that which is not afflicted. And the suspicion or the doubt which is afflicted by its nature is a wrong view, and by afflicted so we should be able to eliminate, we should strive towards eliminate it. And it is also the source of many suffering. Wrong view is disturbed understanding that falls into denying what exists and affirming that does not. I have explained this according to the general system of tenets. The ninth one, the view of the supremacy of ethics and observances is disturbed, understanding that considers this to be paths to liberation. Wrong view is disturbed, understanding that falls into denying what exists and affirming that does not. And even in the afflicted emotions, we can distinguish between those who are view and those who are non-views. And I have presented this according to the general system of tenets. For those who perceive that ignorance and the view of the transitory are distinct from ignorance that is unclear regarding the situation of the aggregates, the view of the transitory that mistakes the aggregates for the self arises. From this, the other kaleshas appear. Those who perceive that the two are one, is it that the view of the transitory is a root of the kaleshas. There are two schools of thought. Destroy you, destroy others, destroy your ethical discipline. Your property declines and is depleted. Teachers and protectors abnormish you. Your quarrel, lose your reputation, are reborn in the condition lacking freedom. You lose the virtue gained and not yet gained and are despondent. Reflect extensively and keen on these drawbacks. And whenever any root secondary collision arises, be aware of it. And thinking when it's come, cherish opposing it with antidotes. So when we speak about the karmas of relating to the physical actions as verbal or physical, it seems as it is presented here, it is also asserted in the same way by the highest Madhyamaka school. The mental factor that is concomitant with mind and is mental karma, propelling the mind towards its object is karma as intention. The physical and verbal karmas that are motivated by karma as intention are called intended karmas. Non-virtuous karmas are non-meritorious karmas. Non-meritorious karmas are virtues that are found within desired wrong beings. Immovable karmas are perceived as contaminated virtues, found within the beings of the form and formless realms. As Aryas do not accumulate nimokarma to be propelled into samsara, those who do not accumulate it are all alternate beings, after including the supreme dharma level of samaya and the path of preparation. How you die and are reborn. Factors of death are the exhaustion of lifespan, the exhaustion of merit, dying before lifespan is complete, etc. Nine and all are given in the sutras. So the most subtle form of the mind during the death is considered to be neutron. But those one who have high realizations through the tantric practice, then they may have the ability to convert the very subtle mind at the time of death into a positive. Page number 70. Neither of the two kinds of thinking mentioned above occurs. Those who have accomplished murshu will seem to pass from darkness to light, and their death throes will be less intense. For the sinful, it is the opposite. When those who have accomplished non-virtue die, they perceive various unpleasant forms and experience great suffering. Those whose actions were neutral experience neither pain nor joy at death. It is taught that aside from rebirth as a god or as a hell being, for all kinds of rebirth, death throes are experienced. When you die between virtuous and non-virtuous thinking, whichever is more familiar to you will manifest. If you are equally familiar with both, whatever you think of first will remain manifest, and you will think of nothing else. However, when the subtle aspect of the mind comes into play, both kinds of thinking cease, and the mind becomes neutral. When dying, as long as various appearances remain clear, due to long-term familiarization, attachment to yourself arises. We're in page number 71, the second para. It is said when its parents are cobbling, the intermediate state being perceives them or not, there are two traditions. However, when it is to be born female, it desires the man and wants to lie with him. And when it is to be born male, it desires the women and wants to exclude the man. Then it sees only the male and female genitals, and feeling angry with them, it is said it dies from the intermediate state. Like a skill tipping, it is conceived. Once through the parents' intense desire, thick semen is generated. Drops of both semen and blood inevitably ensue. So this is in terms of human's lifespan. Or there is two ways that some considers the lifespan of intermediate state of birth as in terms of a human rebirth or in terms of the any rebirth that the intermediate state is going to take. By the power of consciousness, great elements for the senses other than the above combined with them, and including the semen and blood arises along with the senses. Then for those who assert one, the consciousness basis wall enters. Those who do not possess the consciousness basis of wall consider that a mental consciousness takes conception. There are two views. If you do not hasten to the place of birth out of attachment to it, you cannot possibly take birth in that place. Therefore, butchers and such to be reborn in hell see those to be slaughtered in that place, and from habitual attachment to them rush there. Then feeling angry with the image of the place of birth, their intermediate state ceases and they take rebirth. When animals, hungry spirits, so the process of taking rebirth is in practically nowadays we have test tube babies where the semen from the both partners are taken and stored in special utensils under special surveillance and are able to generate siblings or babies. I have a discussion with one scientist who is really a renowned one, and he told me that male's semen, which is purple and working, and also a female's arteries, So if they, even though both are working, if they combine together, is there a possibility or is there a certain that it will conceive? It is not so, he told me. So then there is a third condition that is needed, that which is none other than the intermediate state of rebirth, that is waiting to be entered into the combination of that semen and the blood. And also, the nature of the consciousness is according to the mind-only school, considers that consciousness as the basis of all the karmas. Like a scale tipping, it is conceived. Once through the parent's intense desire, thick semen is generated. Drops of both semen and blood inevitably ensue. They mix in the place of birth and take the shape of skin on top of milk. Page number 72, the measure of having produced that thinking, feeling repulsed by samsara and attracted to a state of peace like the wish to escape from those caught in a house fire or in prison, is the measure of having generated the attitude. As Lama Tsongkhapa stated in the Expert of the Three Principles, that the true renunciation is something having renounced upon all the worldly affairs day and night effortlessly. Third, eliminating false ideas regarding it. Wandering in samsara under the influence of karmas and kaleshas is to be feared by bodhisattvas too. But it is said, taking birth in samsara under the influence of compassion and prayer should be delighted in understanding the meaning of the sutras. As it is said in the ornament of the Madhyamaka philosophy, that having seen the negativity side, negativities of the samsara, then one generates the wish to liberate from it. Then again, one should not be having a wish to stay in the peace or the nirvana, having a nirvana that is free from liberation. Fourth, established nature of bond leading to liberation. If householders strive to do so, they too can overcome samsara. However, the conquerors and their children sing many praises to the basis that is ordination for overcoming the falls of samsara. As Pabongor Rinpoche has written that if one practices, then one can attain liberation even as a lay person in a family. As the examples of the Marbas and other great masters. So if one do not practice, even if you stay meditated for events, but the liberation won't be attained. Lord Buddha himself, the reason why he renounced his printed life and become a bhikshu or a monk in order to get enlightenment is not that he has a huge desire for his family or the princely life, but it was a sign or a symbol for his disciple to follow in such a way. And in normal respective, first as a normal human person, and also after that taking enlightenment, getting enlightenment at Bodh Gaya. And after that, before that, gradually from taking the vows and the progressing of the all the stages of the birds. So in a short span of years, and in a short span of a few years, he attained enlightenment. So if we contemplate further, there is inconsistency in understanding of how someone can attain the enlightenment so quickly. But in terms of the Mahayana's explanation, which speaks about the four kayas or the four enlightened bodies, and also the omniscient body, which is also needs a cause and a condition which is also concordant or corresponding to the causes. So therefore, we have to maintain that the clear light which is present in ourselves has to be the primary causes or the substantial causes for the four kayas or the four enlightened bodies of a Buddha. And the basis of that mind, which is the energy, as the external bodies or the form body. And also the first, the wisdom body. Wisdom body and the complete enjoyment body. And to the other. So when we explain about the concept of the four bodies, four enlightened bodies, it's very important that we rely upon the tantric explanation of the way, of the means to acquire that four enlightened bodies, because that is the only means, the possibly to explain and to attain those enlightened bodies. So the Supreme Enlightened Body is the main reason for Buddha taking the Supreme Enlightened Body is in order to come to the sentient being and making it possible for all the general ordinary beings to see in person and receive the teaching. The best recipient of any practitioner is the Buddhist, the bhikshu's vows. And upon having the bhikshu's vows, then if we can take the bodhisattva's vows, or having all those things, then if you still take the tantra vows, then it is the combination of all the perfect vows and the sources. Next, you're serving billions of Buddhas for as many eons as there are water molecules in the Ganges River, with food and drink, parasols and banners, and rows of butter lamps. If someone moved by faith observes a single precept for a day and a night, at a time when the sacred Dharma is completely disintegrating, and the Sugata's teaching is coming to an end, the merit of the latter will be 10 million times greater. So even it is a practitioner in a family or a lay person, except for that, we have to abide by the, all the other practice or all the other vows. This utterly certain explanation of the practice of the path shared with intermediate beings is complete here. We are on page number 73. So we will stop here for today. For tomorrow, so it's the Mahaparinirvana of Lama Tsongkhapa.